The scene, the unchanging landscape, river, sea, and misty mountain range, are silent witnesses and sworn warrant for the truth of these stories, which made Jacob's thoughts so weighty and his mien so awe-inspiring when he mused. I relate them in detail, circumstantially, as they can be proven to have happened here in abiding harmony with mountain and valley. Here it was. It all fits. I myself went down into the depths and looked from the western shore of the evil-tasting sea of Lot, saw all with my own eyes, and that it is in order and agrees one part with another. Yes, these bluish heights in the east, beyond the lie, are Moab and Ammon, the lands of the children of Lot who were thrust out, whom his daughters bare to him. Far off to the south, beyond the sea, glimmers Edom, Seir, the Goatland, whence Esau rushed wildly off to meet his brother, and met him at Jabbok. And the Mount of Gilead, where Laban overtook his son-in-law, and its local relation to the Jabbok River, whither Jacob afterwards came. It is all quite right. The name of Gilead on the eastern side of the Jordan was probably used by extension much further north, as far as the river Warmuk, which unites its rushing waters with the Jordan not far from the Sea of Chinnereth of Gennesareth. But more precisely, the name applies to the heights which extend westward and eastward on both shores of the Jabbok, and from them one goes down to its thickets and the ford which Jacob chose for his train. But he stopped behind for the night, and experienced that remarkable adventure which made him limp somewhat in his walk forever after. How clear it is, moreover, that since here the entry followed into the hot gore of the stream, he did not at once turn off with his weary train of human beings and animals actually into his own native district, but went straight through westwards into the vale of Shechem, at the foot of Gerizim and Ebal, where he hoped to come to rest. Yes, it all agrees in itself, and bears evidence in the long run to the truth of the shepherd's songs. It will forever remain unclear how the clod-like Laban felt in his mind during his hot and panting pursuit, for his bearing, when he reached his goal, was indeed a most pleasant surprise to Jacob, whose mind later reveled in its beautiful correspondence with Esau's unhoped-for mildness at their meeting. Yes, Laban's state of mind had been obviously just as confused as the Red One's. He snorted with rage and took up arms against the fugitive, but afterwards more mildly characterized Jacob's conduct as folly, and during the conversation with his nephew admitted that a god, the god of his sister, had visited him in a dream and threatened him on his life not to speak otherwise than friendly with his son-in-law. That might all be, since it would be quite enough for Laban to hear of Abram's and Nahor's God, in order to ascribe to him just as actual an existence as to Ishtar or Adad, even though he did not reckon him among his own. But whether he, though not of the faith, did actually see and hear Yeho, the one and only, in his dream, remains doubtful. Teachers and commentators have confessed themselves baffled, and it is more likely that he clothed in the garment of a vision certain feelings and fears which came over him on the way, certain considerations which made themselves felt in the silence of his soul. Jacob would be no wiser than he in the matter, but would acquiesce in that way of putting it. 25 years had taught Laban that he had to do with a man of blessing. His rage is comprehensible, considering that by his departure Jacob was removing the blessing for whose sake Laban had sacrificed so much. But no less comprehensible is it that his first intention of confronting Jacob in force was on the way weakened by his misgivings. There could be no objection to Jacob having taken the daughters of Laban with him. Jacob had bought them. They were his, body and soul. And Laban himself had once upon a time jeered at the beggar who had nowhither to lead them in the wedding procession from the house of their parents. Times were changed indeed. For now the gods had granted this man to plunder him, Laban. In setting out in pursuit, he had not consciously the intention of taking away the plunder by force of arms, but was vaguely urged to soften the blow of losing all that had passed out of his hands into Jacob's by at least parting friends with the lucky thief. It would certainly be better for him if he did so. There was only one matter which still enraged him, and which he would certainly push to a settlement: the theft of the teraphim. This was the clear and definite motive among all the vague ones which urged him on. He must have back his household gods, and if the reader has conceived in his heart the smallest stirring of sympathy for the Chaldean man of business and keeper of contracts, he may feel a little pang over the reflection that Laban never did get them back. The meeting of the fugitive and the pursuer took place quite quietly, with a strange lack of unpleasantness. Considering Laban's mood when he set out, one would have expected a clash. Night fell upon Gilead, and Jacob had just made his camp on the damp plateau, begged out the camels, and herded the sheep and goats together to keep warm, when Laban silently came on like a shadow, set up his tent nearby, and disappeared into it for the night without more ado. But he left it early, and went with heavy tread to Jacob's, before which the other somewhat aimlessly awaited him. They touched forehead and breast, and sat down together. "It rejoiceth my soul," so Jacob began the somewhat delicate interview, "to behold once more my father and uncle. May the hardships of travel not have availed to lessen his bodily well-being." "I am strong beyond my years," Laban replied. "Surely thou knewest it to have laid upon me this journey."
"How so?" Jacob asked.
"How so?" Laban repeated. "Man, bethink thyself what thou hast done to me, stealing away like a thief from me and our contract, and robbing me of my daughters as by the sword. For in my way of looking at things, thou shouldst always have remained with me according to the contract, which hath cost me blood, but yet I have held to it, as is thought right in our land. But if thou sufferest it not, but covetest so vehemently to go, why then hast thou not opened thy mouth and spoken like a son? Even so late might we have made good what at the right moment thy circumstances prevented thee in, and have accompanied thee in state with harps and cymbals by land or by water, according to the custom. But what hast thou done? Must thou then always steal by day and by night? And hast thou no heart in thy body, and no bowels of feeling, that thou hast not granted to my old age to kiss my children for the last time? But I will tell thee what thou hast done. Thou hast dealt with great folly. Such is the word that occurs to me to describe thy dealings. And if I would, and if yesternight a voice had not come to me in a dream, and it was, it may be, the voice of thy God, and counseled me not to meddle with thee, thou canst believe me that my sons and my servants have enough iron in their arms to make thee pay for thy folly in stealing away like a thief."
"Yea," Jacob replied, "what is true must remain so. And the sons of my master are boars and young lions, and would long since have done to me after their kind, if not in the day, then at night when I lay asleep. For thou wouldst willingly have believed that it was a ravening beast, and greatly have bewept me. Askest thou why I have gone away in silence and made no speeches? Should I then not have feared before thee that thou wouldst not agree, but would have taken away from me my wives, thy daughters, or at least have laid upon me new conditions for the permission to depart, and have wrested from me my goods and possessions? For my uncle is hard, and his God is the ruthless law of business dealings. And why hast thou stolen my gods from me?" cried Laban suddenly, and the angry veins stood out finger-thick on his brow. Jacob was speechless, and he said as much. But at bottom, his soul was lightened that Laban put himself in the wrong by such a mad assertion. It counted in his favor.
"Gods?" repeated he, in amazement. "The teraphim? Thou meanest that I have taken thy images from the chamber? But that is the greatest matter for laughter that I have heard in my life. Take thy reason to thy aid, man, and consider with what thou reproachest me. What worth or value could they have for me, thy idols, the clay images, that I should make myself guilty for the sake of them?
for I know that they were turned upon the wheel and dried in the sun like to other household gear, and have no power enough to make a slave brat's nose stop running when it hath a cold. But as thou seemest to have lost them, it were better not to praise them too highly before thee."
Laban responded,
"That is all only false and cunning of thee, to do as though thou settest no value upon them, that I may believe thou hast them not. But no man can ascribe so little worth to the teraphim as not to steal them gladly. That is impossible. And since they are no longer where they were, then it must be that thou hast them."
"Hearken now unto me," said Jacob. "It is very good that thou art here, and hast not found it hasty to steal after me so many days in this matter, for it must be made plain to the uttermost. I, the accused, demand it. My camp is open unto thee. Go thou through where thou wilt, and search. Turn everything out without fear, and according to thy pleasure, I give thee a free hand. With whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Whether it be by me or by my seed, let him be slain here straightway before all eyes, and let it happen by fire, by the sword, or by burial, as thou choosest. Begin thy search here with me, and search carefully, for I insist that the matter be done thoroughly." His heart was light because he could put off everything on the teraphim, so that there should be no talk save of them, and he would be able to play the injured party at the end. He did not dream how slippery the ground was beneath his feet, and how he measured himself against death. For his innocent Rachel was the guilty one. But by her great shrewdness, with the utmost skill and resolution, she came off scatheless from the folly that she had done. For Laban answered and said, "So let it be, then." And getting up eagerly, he began to make search of the camp for his images. We know exactly the course it took. At first he was very zealous and thorough. But as the hours went by, in vain hunting, he grew tired and disheartened. The sun got very hot, and though he was without an upper garment, in a shirt open at the throat and with his sleeves rolled up, the sweat rolled down under his cap, and his face got so red that one might have feared an apoplexy for the stout elderly man, and all on account of the teraphim. Had Rachel no heart at all for her father, that she could let him be so tortured and mock him with so straight a face? We must remember the power of suggestion and communication that went out from Jacob's significant personality, and his spiritual conceptions upon all those about him, especially upon those who loved him. By the power of his spirit and his self-will, Rachel herself played a divine part, that of the Virgin of the Skies and Mother of the Blessing-Bringing Boy. She was the more inclined to see the rest of the world, her father included, through Jacob's eyes, and to acquiesce in his appointed role therein. For her, as for her beloved, Laban was a betraying devil and demon of the black moon, who at length himself suffered betrayal in grander style than his own. And Rachel never blinked an eye at the sight, for it was a pious, significant, and predestined event which here went forward, in which even Laban played his part with more or less awareness and consent. She had as little sympathy with Laban as Isaac's people with Esau at the time of the great hoax. Laban had come up at night and gone to Jacob early next morning, no doubt to demand of him that which she had with her. The father had got up from the interview and begun to search. This was reported to her by the little maid she had sent to spy, who, in her haste, held up her skirt between her teeth to run the faster, so that she was quite bare in front. "Laban is hunting," she announced in a loud whisper. Then Rachel made haste and took the teraphim, which were wrapped in a cloth, and carried them out in front of her black tent, where Leah's riding camel and her own were picketed, highly bred animals possessing a grotesque beauty, with wise little serpents' heads on top of their swaying necks, and feet like cushions, so that they did not sink in the sand. They lay on straw, which the servants had strewn plentifully for them, arrogantly chewing the cud. Rachel thrust her stolen gods among their straw, buried them entirely in it, and sat down on the place she had disturbed, in front of the animals, so that they looked over her shoulder as they chewed. Thus she awaited Laban. He, as we know, had begun looking in Jacob's tent, turning his son-in-law's gear upside down, shaking the rugs, pulling the mattress from the stretcher bed, turning over shirts, mantles, and woolen covers, upsetting the box that held Jacob's game, which he loved to play with Rachel, the evil eye, so that 5 of the little stone figures were broken. His shoulders twitching with rage, he had gone thence into Leah's place, and then into Zilpah's and Bilhah's, sparing none of their women's matters in his search, trembling so that he stuck himself with their pins and smeared his beard with the green dye which they used to lengthen the corners of their eyes, so clumsy was he made by his eagerness and his consciousness that to be ridiculous was his role in life. So he came to where Rachel sat, and spoke, "Greeting and good health, my daughter. Thou hadst not thought to see me." "May I see thee in health?" she responded. "My father seeketh?" "I seek stolen goods," said Laban, "throughout all your huts and herds."
"An evil matter," she nodded, and the 2 camels looked over her shoulder with sly and arrogant smiles.
"Why doth not Jacob, my husband, help thee in thy search?"
"He would find nothing," answered Laban. "I must hunt alone, and broil myself in this scorching sun on Gilead's mount."
"Yes, yes, a grievous matter," she said again. "There is my dwelling. Look about within it if thou must, and deemest it fit. But take care of my pots and spoons. Already thy beard is somewhat green."
Laban stooped and went in. He soon came out again to Rachel and the camels, saying nothing but sighing.
"Were there no stolen goods within?" she asked.
"Not to my eye," he answered.
"Then they must be elsewhere," said she.
"Of a surety my lord hath wondered why I stand not up before him, as would be respectful and mannerly. It is only that I feel myself somewhat unfit, and am hindered in the freedom of my movement."
"How then unfit?" Laban desired to know. "Art thou then hot and cold by turns?"
"Not so. I am only indisposed," she answered.
"But wherein?" he asked once more. "Hast thou a bad tooth or a boil?"
"Indeed, my lord, it is naught but the custom of women that is upon me, and I have my periods," she answered, while the camel smiled more mockingly and arrogantly than before over her shoulder.
"Naught else?" said Laban. "It counteth not. Rather, I am even glad for thee that thou art not pregnant, for thou hast little gift for childbearing. Blessings on thee! I must search my goods."
With which he left her and hunted until the afternoon, when the sun was declining and he was almost worn out. Then he came back to Jacob, tired, dirty, and undone, with hanging head.
"Well, and where were the images?" Jacob asked.
"Nowhere, it seemeth," the other replied, lifted his arms and let them fall.
"It seemeth," Jacob sneered, for now he knew where he stood, and that he could say what he liked. "Sayest thou seemeth to me, and yet wilt not take it for proof of my guiltlessness, that thou hast nothing found after 10 hours' search, turning my camp upside down and rooting about in thy rage to slay me or one of mine? All my gear thou hast stumbled. Certainly I gave thee free permission, but that thou hast done it was surely lacking in tact. And what hast thou found of thine own? Lay it down before me, and accuse me before thy people and mine, and let the public voice choose between us. And how hast thou befouled and overheated thyself, and all to destroy me? And what is my trespass? I was young when I came unto thee, and I am now of ripe years, even though, as I hope, long life may still be vouchsafed unto me. So much time have I spent in thy service, and have been unto thee a head servant, such as the world hath not seen. So much my anger letteth me not to say, though my shame should shut it up within me. I have found water, so that thou wast free of Isilanu's sons, and couldst throw off the yoke of the bankers, and thou hast blossomed like the rose in the valley of Sharon, and stood in fruit like to the date palm in the low-lying plains of Jericho. Thy goats have dropped 2-fold, and thy sheep 2, and may I be struck down if ever I have eaten a ram of thy flock, for I have cropped grass with the gazelles, and drunk at the watering place of the cattle. Thus have I lived for thee,
and serve thee 14 years for thy daughters, and 6 years for nothing, and again nothing, and 5 for the outcasts of thy flocks. And in the day the heat consumed me, and I have shivered with the frost at night in the plains, and for carefulness my sleep departed from mine eyes. But if any mischance touched the flocks, or a lion stole upon them, then might I not swear to my own guiltlessness, but I must pay for the loss, and thou didst as though I stole from thee day and night. And thou hast changed my wages according to thine own will, and put Leah off upon me when I thought to embrace my rightful bride. And that shame I shall feel in my limbs the rest of my life. And except the God of my father, the Almighty God, had been with me, surely thou hadst now sent me empty away. But God would not that his blessing be mocked. Never hath he spoken with a stranger, but to thee he spake for my sake, and rebuked thee yesternight, that thou shouldst not deal with me other than in friendly wise. And shall I call that speaking friendly, when thou comest and ravest that I have stolen thy gods? But since thou findest them not, despite thy much search, then must the loss be only apparent.